From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Dale Thronberry.
And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I have the privilege to be your host this morning on Veterans Radio, coming to you live from the studios of WDEO, 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and on the Internet at AveMariaRadio.net. I want to, today's program I'm really excited about. I'm probably going to be stuttering all the way through it because we're going to be talking about the Medal of Honor. And the reason that we're talking about the Medal of Honor today is that President Obama, as a result of a congressional inquiry, is going to be awarding over two dozen veterans Medal of Honors, including 19 who were overlooked because of racial and ethnic backgrounds. I want to point out that this commission was set up by President Bush during his administration in 2002, I believe it was. And we've got a number of people on the program that we're going to be talking about. First of all, I want to remind you also is that the new website for Veterans Radio is up and running. Yay! I should have the crowd noise here. We're very excited to have this going, and we're hoping that if you are listening on the Internet, if you go to the Contact Us, just click on that Contact Us and let us know that everything is working. We want to make sure that it is. We're migrating everything from an old website to a new one, and being as technologically challenged as I am, I still am amazed at what our people, Mary and Dan, have been able to do in a short amount of time. But if you have any suggestions that you want us to do that maybe we could add to it or change, we've got veterans organizations that we've got listed there that can help out our veterans. We've got a PX there where you can buy books and other paraphernalia that we're going to be offering soon. So just let us know what you think of it, and any improvements that we can make would be greatly appreciated. Getting back to the Medal of Honor, as I mentioned, we do a little segment every week about the Medal of Honor, and we realize how important this award is, and I know that people don't ever win the Medal of Honor. They're awarded it for their actions in combat in most situations. And so we thought that this special occasion for these 24 people who are going to be receiving the Medal of Honor was kind of a large number, and we find out that this hasn't occurred since World War II. So first joining us on my line right now is a Medal of Honor recipient, and his name is Thomas Kelly. And Tom Kelly received his Medal of Honor for actions in 15 June 1969 on the Ung Wung Canal in Kien Hoa Province in the Republic of Vietnam. He was a naval officer there with the River Patrol, the River Rats. And Captain Kelly, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
It is our pleasure to have you on. And the reason I asked you to come on is I contacted the Medal of Honor Society, and you were kind enough to agree to come on. I wanted to know what is your reaction to what the president is going to be doing and all of these Medal of Honors that are going to be distributed?
I think it's a wonderful thing, and we really look forward to welcoming into our Brotherhood Specialist Arivia and Staff Sergeant Morris and Sergeant First Class Rodella, who are the three living recipients. I can't wait to meet them. National Medal of Honor Day will be in March, and March 25th down in D.C., so I'm hoping they can make it. But for the families of the other 21 who are receiving the medal posthumously, it's an honor long overdue, and as you mentioned earlier, a lot of it was due to the way people thought about different minorities back in the day, and fortunately we've passed that now. So I think it's a thrilling thing, and all my fellow Medal of Honor recipients feel the same way.
I just wanted to ask you, Captain Kelly, what does it mean to you to be a Medal of Honor recipient?
Well, we wear this medal on behalf of the, 16 million or so, or more than that, 22 million people who have served this country in time of war over the years. And many of them could have been awarded the medal just like we were. It's an honor to be sure, but it's a very humbling experience because we do wear it on behalf of others who may not be here to enjoy it.
Are there certain responsibilities that you feel you have as a result of being awarded the Medal of Honor?
Well, when you receive the Medal of Honor, all of a sudden you become somewhat of a celebrity, and so they expect you to become a polished after-dinner speaker and motivational speaker and stuff like that, which doesn't necessarily come without genes. But seriously, we take it very seriously to impart to, especially the youth of America, the qualities that the Medal of Honor stands for: duty, courage, moral courage primarily, and willingness to serve others. And that's really what the medal and being in the service is all about, is taking care of your fellow soldier and providing service to your country. And anybody could do that. You don't have to be in uniform to do that.
Right. We always talk about the ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and it's good to know that sometimes people can be rewarded for this. And I know that after you got out of the service, you continued serving veterans, didn't you? I don't remember
exactly.
Yeah,
I came back to Massachusetts, my home, and for a dozen or so years, I led the state agency that takes care of veterans until a couple of years ago. So that was a very rewarding experience, because we're faced with a whole new set of challenges with the returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, with serious emotional issues in many cases, traumatic brain injury, and other hidden wounds. So everybody had to kind of revamp and set off in a new direction. And I think overall we're doing a pretty good job.
Well, Captain Kelly, I want to thank you so very much, and thank you for your service to our country. And I want to thank you for being on Veterans Radio, and I hope to be talking to you again soon.
Thank you. You're not related to either Marv Thronberry or Faith Thronberry, are you?
I am, yes, sir. Marvelous Marv and Faye were my cousins, distant cousins.
I'm a big Red Sox fan. I think Faye played for us for a while.
Yes, he did. That's funny. You might have to go out and get some, Miller Lite or something.
Well, you have some good genes then.
thank you very much, sir. And we will be talking to you again. That's Captain Tom Kelly, a recipient of Medal of Honor. Thank you, sir. I want to remind our audience, you want to find out exactly what Captain Kelly did, you can go to the Medal of Honor website, and there's his citation is there with a description of what he actually did. This man was amazing. That's enough said right there. Anyway, we're going to be talking more about the Medal of Honor and these new recipients of this in just a moment. I want to remind you, if you have a question or comment, to give us a call here at Veterans Radio at 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. We'll be right back very shortly with our guests, Doug Sterner and Dwight Zimmerman. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. First Lieutenant Jack Jacob.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. We're going to be talking about the Medal of Honor. And my first guest up right now is going to be Dwight Zimmerman. Dwight is the author of an amazing book called Uncommon Valor. It's about the recipients of the Medal of Honor from Afghanistan and the Iraq conflicts. And Dwight, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Yeah, hi there, Dale. I'm glad to be here.
This is a pretty exciting moment. I want to make sure that we're waiting to get in contact with Doug, and I'll bring him on in just a second. But when we were reading the paper, you're actually the one that sent me the article from the Washington Post about the president awarding 24 veterans, including 19 who were overlooked for the Medal of Honor, And right now, I guess it looks like we've got Doug back on the line. And my other guest right now is Doug Sterner. And Doug is the curator of the Military Times Hall of Valor. He is also an author of Restoring Valor, One Couple's Mission to Expose Fraudulent War Heroes and to Protect America's Military Award System. That's a title there, Doug. And but also I wanted to talk with Doug because we know that he is one of the leading authorities on the Medal of Honor. And Doug, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good to be on with you this morning.
And so I'm going to go back to Dwight right here. And Dwight, let me ask you, what do you think this ceremony means to America?
Well, obviously, to people who have served in the military, it's an enormous event. And it also sends a very powerful message to members of minorities, whether or not they served in the military, that justice, though it might take some time, eventually gets served. This is a wonderful event, obviously. What I am also happy about is that it really brings to the forefront the Medal of Honor and its meaning. When my co-author John Gresham and I were doing the research for Uncommon Valor, at that time, so few had been awarded since Vietnam. There were two, Shugart and Gordon at Mogadishu. That was the Black Hawk Down incident. And when we were putting together Uncommon Valor, there were only four at that moment who had received it in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we discovered that as a result of so few Medals of Honor being awarded since 1972, basically, that people, the average civilian, had forgotten completely what the Medal of Honor meant. And thus, we contacted our publisher and said, look, we need to include a history of the Medal of Honor itself. And our book winds up being the first and only complete history of the Medal of Honor from its inception in the Civil War up to, well, when it came out in a few years ago. So it's a two-part story, one about these individuals itself and then also about the medal. We were very happy about that because then it's almost like the dam started to burst when our book, as we were putting together the book, two more recipients were announced. We managed to incorporate them, and then when the book comes out, there are more recipients, and now it's culminated with this event, which really is historic.
Right. I mean, we got 24 people that are, you know, going to be receiving the Medal of Honor. Unfortunately, only three still survive, but it's still unprecedented, as you mentioned. I don't even know when the last time this occurred.
It occurred at the end of World War II, essentially a big wrap-up. But to put this into context, even when that happened, the majority went to whites. Mm-hmm. In Uncommon Valor, for instance, I'm going to quote here, during World War II, approximately 13 million men and women served in the military. African Americans were the largest minority with approximately 1 million. By the end of the war, 432 Medals of Honor had been awarded. Of that total, 38 went to Hispanic Americans, 10 to Native Americans, 3 to Jewish Americans, 2 to Asian Pacific Americans, and none to African Americans. So you can see this really is helping address a major oversight.
Well, that's for sure. Doug, I wanted you to kind of chime in here, and maybe you can give us a little history of the Medal of Honor and, you know, when it began. I mean, we know it began in the Civil War, but there have been some changes in this award over history, haven't there?
There have been a number of changes. Of course, there were the changes in the design of the medal prior to the 1900s that resulted in the new Medal of Honor design that we have today, which was then copyrighted by the U.S. government to protect the Medal of Honor. But in terms of actual corrections to the history of the Medal of Honor, the first was in 1917. At that time, there was a review of the Medals of Honor that had been awarded because some had been awarded frivolously, and a total of 911 Medals of Honor were subsequently rescinded as having been improperly awarded. Also, at about the same time, the military established the Pyramid of Honor, that is, a series of additional medals that could be awarded, because up until 1917, you either got the Medal of Honor or you got nothing.
Oh,
and there were
okay.
some individuals who performed heroically enough to have received something, but perhaps not the Medal of Honor. So we got the Pyramid of Honor. Then under the Carter administration, a review was made of the Medal of Honor awarded to the only woman in history ever awarded the Medal of Honor, Dr. Mary Edwards Walker. Her Medal of Honor was one of the 911 that was rescinded in the 1917 purge, and it was restored. Subsequent to that, there were seven other civilians whose Medals of Honor had been rescinded because they were civilians, most notably among them the famous showman Buffalo Bill Cody. And those were okay. restored.
Oh, okay. Well, either one of you can jump in on this, and I'll stick with you, Doug, right now. Is you mentioned that 900 of them were rescinded, and why? What did they get these awards for?
Well, many of them put themselves in for the awards. The Medal of Honor was in its infancy. Nobody knew what was going to happen with an award in our military. Many people thought that American military personnel would laugh at the idea of medals because our form of government tried to distance itself from European governments, and their practice in military was to put all these medals on royalty and other people of high position, and it wasn't the little guy that got the medals. So if you saw someone with medals, you saw that European custom of their people who really didn't do anything, that were just were somebody.
Right.
And so the Medal of Honor was introduced to some question as to whether or not it would be received. And actually, up to 5 years after the end of the Civil War, only about a third of the Medals of Honor ultimately awarded for Civil War action were presented. But they were popular. And over the next 50 years, any number of veterans, one individual wrote to the War Department and said, I've heard they've had a Medal of Honor created and I want one, and he got one. And so there was some of those things. There was several members, more than two dozen members of Lincoln's Funeral Guard that were awarded Medals of Honor. One entire unit from Maine received Medals of Honor for extending their tour of duty for service by 3 days during the Battle of Gettysburg, although they never saw action. So those were frivolously awarded, and those were the majority that were rescinded in 1917.
Okay, geez, if I had known that, I would have extended my own service. They just wanted to make me a lieutenant.
I would never want to be a Medal of Honor recipient. I'm a veteran, but I'll tell you, you asked some great questions of Tom Kelly, and when the president hangs that Medal of Honor around a young man's neck, he lived in a glass house the rest of his life. And, well, John Leviteau, who earned the Air Force Medal of Honor in the Vietnam War, used to say, because of this medal, I can never retire. You become a part of America's permanent history and an ambassador to our other men and women in service for the rest of your life.
I agree with you, and I know that both of you have talked to many Medal of Honor recipients, as have I, and I'm always amazed by their how humble they are and their sense of responsibility, as Tom mentioned earlier on, to the rest of the population, especially the veterans population.
Yes, and that is, you know, very, very true of their relationship. Going back to the changes that were made, and Mr. Gresham has mentioned that there was not a single Medal of Honor awarded to a black American in World War II. There was also not a single Medal of Honor awarded to a black American in World War I. And so first there was a review of the awards in World War I that resulted in the posthumous award of the Medal of Honor to Freddie Stowers in 1991. He wasn't killed in action, but he died after World War I before his Medal of Honor was presented. Then they did the review of the World War II medals of, or DSCs to America's black soldiers, and in 1994, they awarded seven Medals of Honor to black soldiers of World War II. Only one of them was still living at the time.
Okay. I want to, for our civilian audience, you mentioned, you said a DSC. What is a DSC?
DSC is a Distinguished Service Cross. In that review of 1917 and then the subsequent actions that established a series of awards, the Army's Distinguished Service Cross, or DSC, became the second highest award. It was awarded to somebody who was determined to have performed heroically, but whose actions may not rise to the level of the Medal of Honor.
Okay. Dwight, I know you wanted to jump in here. You had something you wanted to say?
Yes. The point here that I want to stress here is that we are talking for these 24 that are going to be awarded March 18th. That's the Army Medal of Honor. We're still waiting for the results on the Navy and Marine Corps and Air Force review.
Oh, okay. Actually,
do you know if there's one that has been ordered under this legislation? Because that becomes my question. It's an excellent point. There was no review of the Navy awards that I'm aware of the World War I and World War II that were previously done, nor again in 2000 there was a review of the Japanese Americans that resulted in a ceremony almost as big. 22 Medals of Honor were awarded on June 21st, 2000, to Japanese Americans of World War II. And every single one of these late awards since the year 2000, counting these 24, a total of 74 Medals of Honor will have been awarded, and all the belated awards have been Army awards.
I wasn't aware of that. Were you, Dwight?
Actually, yes. But Doug tells
that's
it so
okay.
much better than I do.
I'm not the expert. You guys are. That's why I have you on the program.
Well, an expert is a has-been, and a spurt is a drip under pressure, so I guess I'm an expert.
Well, I know that there were some difficulties in finding the records because they had to go back and recreate, with awards, you have to have eyewitnesses and so on and so forth. And, Dwight, I'll ask you, what were some of the problems they ran into that you were aware of?
Well, the biggest one was the 1973 fire in the National Personnel Records Center at St. Louis, Missouri, that destroyed 18 million military personnel files. And these ranged from service records in 1912 through 1960. And so this included, obviously, World War I, World War II, Korea. And, in fact, most of the Air Force files from 47 through 64 were lost.
So this wasn't an urban legend that all these records had been destroyed?
No. Separately, I had encountered this when doing research on other books and having to get military personnel records, and historians said, sorry, can't help you.
And ironically, though, that 1973 fire affected only the individual OMPF, official military personnel file. Actually, the general orders for every one of these DSCs is on file at the National Archives in College Park, Maryland. And there does exist a nearly complete list of all of the DSC recipients. So one of my concerns in terms of this review is the news says that they had gone through approximately 6,000 DSC citations, and there actually have been a total of 6,640, actually, no, I didn't include GWAT in there, awards to members of the U.S. Army, 6,670 DSCs awarded. So it was a nearly complete review of the DSCs post-World War I.
I'm reading from the article here. It says the Army alone identified more than 600, of which these 24 evidently, are receiving their award. But the smaller branches found 275 DSCs. But I don't see anything where it said that they followed up on those.
Well, no, and that's a concern of mine. The articles I've read said that they also found others that might have merited the Medal of Honor. I've seen a couple articles that referred to that, but apparently it was restricted primarily to these ethnic groups in their search. And my number one question is, did that review include the individuals in the war on terrorism? Because we don't see any Iraq-Afghanistan upgrade to the Medal of Honor. Of 74 Medals of Honor that will have been awarded since 2000, four times as many have been awarded for actions in wars now decades old. Only 13 of the 74 Medals of Honor awarded since 2000 went to men who served in Iraq and Afghanistan.
What, Dwight, I'm going to go throw this over in your direction because that seems to be your specialty, that era. What do you think the reason of that is for that?
Well, it's difficult, of course, to assess the rationale behind it. There has always been a resentment between staff officers and line personnel with regards to decorations, because obviously things like the Distinguished Service Cross, the Air Force Cross, the Navy Cross, Silver Star, in other words, the decorations for valor in combat carry a special prestige, the Medal of Honor, of course, being the ultimate and highest of them. So even if a staff officer receives the Distinguished Service Medal, which is comparable on the same level with the Distinguished Service Cross, it doesn't have the same prestige because it was earned in staff work.
Right, and yeah, more administrative than combat. Right?
Exactly. So there has always been a difficulty with respect to the process, which is an arduous process itself. It's an 8-stage process for an individual to receive the Medal of Honor, and I had the pleasure of meeting Major Michael Baca, who was the commanding officer for Ross McGinnis.
Right.
And in talking with him, he said, and I'm going to use my words, not his, he was a little bit more polite, but he went through hell to make sure that Ross got the posthumous Medal of Honor. As soon as the incident occurred, you know, once they returned back to their base, he began the documentation gathering, getting the interviews, filing the paperwork, cross-checking. He had a stack of paper a couple of inches thick, and then he had to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And part of the problem, too, is that personnel get transferred and records can get scattered, lost. They have to be recreated. So there are many obstacles over and above this straightforward process itself that can have an impact. And he became literally a man on the mission to make sure that McGinnis did receive his Medal of Honor.
Well, I'm going to stretch this out a little bit. I'm going to ask Nina if she can find the Ross McGinnis Medal of Honor segment that we have so we can play that at the bottom of the hour. But getting back to this, you mentioned this process that people, you know, that these nominees, for lack of a better word, have to go through. Can Dwight explain where it begins and what happens next?
Okay. Well, obviously it begins with the commanding officer he is the one who has to file the original form, and it's the same form that is used for all decorations, regardless of its nature. And it's an 8-stage process. Now, it's never been specifically stated, publicly anyway, what that process is, but it goes through the various levels, at each higher level, the decision can be approval, disapproved based on Medal of Honor criteria, or downgraded. And even if it's disapproved, the review process does allow for an appeal and an overruling. The criteria itself is basically setting a personal example under fire that has inspired other men, devotion to duty under fire, accepting danger, saving life, overcoming one's injuries, defeating great odds, taking command, and seizing an opportunity to strike a blow at the enemy. obviously all under the phrase above and beyond the call of duty.
Right. Well, you know, we're talking with Dwight Zimmerman, author of Uncommon Valor, and Doug Sterner, who is the curator of the Military Times Hall of Valor and the author of a new book, which we're going to talk about after the break, called Restoring Valor. And we're going to take a break right now and have our audience listen to a Medal of Honor thing that we do every week. We try to honor a different Medal of Honor recipient. And so we're going to do that right now. You're listening to Veterans Radio on WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and we will be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Specialist Ross McGinnis threw his back against a grenade thrown into his Humvee, saving the lives of his crewmates. Details after this.
It's pouring rain. It's real dark outside. Your heart starts beating really, really fast. You've never done anything so hard in your life. This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. It's such extreme pain, you don't understand how you can finish. I began to feel that there was no way I was ever going to have my title, U.S. Marine. It takes special inner strength, courage, and desire to do this. I was just thinking, I'm so close. I'm so close. And when I finished, I was like, I'm done. I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me straight in front of me, put her arm on my shoulder and said, good morning, Marine.
PFC Summer Volkman became a United States Marine. Can you? Call 1-800-MARINES. Maybe you could be one of the few and the proud.
On December 4th, 2006, McGinnis was manning the turret in the last Humvee of a six-vehicle patrol in northeast Baghdad when an insurgent threw a grenade from the roof of a nearby building. As he stood up to get ready to jump out of the vehicle, as he'd been trained to do, officials say McGinnis realized the other four soldiers in the vehicle did not know where the grenade had landed and did not have enough time to escape. He threw his back against the radio mount and smothered the explosive with his body. McGinnis was killed instantly, while the other four men survived. He was awarded the Medal of Honor posthumously by President Bush on June 2, 2008. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
You can never get enough or too much, Sousa. You're listening to Veterans Radio coming from the studios of WDEO in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and on our brand new website, which I mentioned is up and running. So we want you to check that out, veteransradio.net, and let us know what you think. And if you have any suggestions or if you want to buy any of the books that we're talking about today, you can do that through our bookstore there on the PX and click on there. If you are interested in sponsoring Veterans Radio, you can go on to the website. There's a tab there. Click on sponsorship. Get a hold of Bob Gould, and we'll set you up. And I want to thank everybody for the support that you've been giving us over the last 10 years. Holy moly. Migrating all of these files over gave me an opportunity to look at the almost 500 programs that we've done. And we have been so privileged and honored to talk to so many great Americans. And so I'm going to reintroduce our two great Americans with us right now, which is Dwight Zimmerman, the author of Uncommon Valor, the story of the Medal of Honor and about the recipients from the Iraq and Afghanistan war. And Dwight, I want to ask you real quickly, have you been able to update this with the changes and the new recipients?
Well, the latest one was to include the first living recipient, Salvador Gunta. But beyond that, there is no new addition to add further. By the way, I do need to thank Doug. I really relied on his site, Home for Heroes, Home of Heroes. It was an invaluable reference for me when John and I were putting together Uncommon Valor. I cannot stress to the listeners how wonderful a site it is, very comprehensive, and I do urge people to visit it and support it, because Doug put together an invaluable site that is the ultimate source for anything and everything about the Medal of Honor recipients.
Well, there you go. That's that.
Well, thank you for your kind words.
Well, thank you. I mean, it, you saved me so much work, it's not even funny.
Give me a call sometime. Let's talk about that 73 fire, and I'll give you some hints on how to get around that.
Okay,
oh,
thank
see,
you.
There we go. See, everybody's working together here on Veterans Radio. That's Doug, that's Doug Stirner,
well, that's
who happens to be not only the founder and creator of this Hall of Heroes, but he also has a Hall of Valor now that you're connected with the Military Times, where people can go and find out some great information, and also your book, Restoring Valor. I want to talk about that in just a little bit. But I want to go through and just briefly take a look at these 24 people that are going to be receiving the Medal of Honor, and it's exciting, I think, although it's a little discouraging. I was talking to Dwight last night, and I was mentioning that, you know, I don't see a whole lot of information out there about this ceremony coming up or about these awards. What can we do?
Well, the first thing you can do is remember these are all Distinguished Service Crosses that are being upgraded to the Medal of Honor. And with the exception of, I think, three of the World War II guys in the Hall of Valor that you mentioned that I curate for Military Times, we have the full citation for the Distinguished Service Cross that was awarded. So if you'll go and look for these 24 guys in the Hall of Valor, you'll read the Distinguished Service Cross that describes their actions, and their Medal of Honor citation is going to be basically a mirror of that DSC citation. So that's your way to get the first peek at the broader action that earned them this award.
Okay, well, then we can do that. But I'm just the article that I found and that Dwight had sent to me is from the Washington Post, and I asked Matt DeLong, who wrote the article, if he could be on the program, but he was occupied this morning. But he's got kind of a real brief description of these 24 men who are going to be receiving the award, and it's always amazing to me when I read these how these people are able to maintain their composure, I guess is the terminology. And I know that the difference between fear and, you know, being a coward and a hero is controlling your fear, and all of these people have certainly controlled their fears. Is there anyone that you've looked at that kind of stands out?
Well, you know, are you asking me or Doug?
Either one of you, if you've had the opportunity to look at this list.
Well, I reviewed the list, and what really strikes me is that, well, most of them are enlisted personnel or NCOs.
Right.
A lot of privates. I'm just scanning.
Yeah, a lot
the
of
list.
Spec fours, corporals.
Yeah, that it points out the common man rising to an uncommon height of courage, the sacrifice that they were willing to make. Obviously, just looking at these short paragraphs from the Washington Post article, you simply get the bare-bones facts. And I definitely want to go to Doug's site. I have yet had the opportunity to do so, to get to read the DFC citation, or DSC citations, forgive me. But even then, the citations are simply a summary. They don't have the complete story. As I was putting together Uncommon Valor and diving in and doing the research and finding out about these individuals, that is when the real impact struck me. And I've said this before, and I'm not ashamed to say it again, there were times leading up to the moment when they were going to die, and they knew it.
Mm-hmm.
The tears were coming down, and I just had to step away from my keyboard and walk around and compose myself before going back there. Individual stories are so wrenching because you're seeing such wonderful, admirable courage to the point where they were willing to sacrifice their lives.
I think when you read about the people like the Ross McGinnis and so forth, you know, that throw themselves on the hand grenades or you know, rush the hill, whatever it happens to be, knowing that they're going to die, but they still do it. And there's that certain inner strength that comes through from these men Just it seems, you know, throughout history, I mean, there have always been people that will do that, and but you never know who it's going to be.
That's
well,
very
Dale,
true.
Go ahead, Doug.
When we get done with the interview, if you'll check your email, you're going to find a 12-page Word document in there.
Goody.
That has all of the DSC, Distinguished Service Cross citations, for these 24 men. And if you want to make that available from your website, you may feel free to do so, and that'll make it easy for people to read the more detailed account. And again, you know, your guests are correct. There's much more beyond the citation, but at least they'll have a little bit more information than what the brief synopsis was put out by DOD has.
Right. Yes, and I'm looking at the Hall of Valor site right now, and they are all there, so you can get. I mean, all of them. You got.
There's a couple of the World War II guys. I think three of the World War II guys that I still had not got their DSC citation, so there's a synopsis, but the others all have the full Distinguished Service Cross citation mm-hmm. in there.
Well, I think it's just amazing that they're actually doing this, and it's being done on a hopefully bipartisan basis, and that maybe they can continue to do this and look at the other branches of the service, and make them the whole, as the word would be, I guess, for the people that deserve to be upgraded to the Medal of Honor.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any Navy, Marine Corps late upgrades like this. The last one was, again, under the Carter administration, a World War II late upgrade under the Carter administration. Mm-hmm. But the other services have not had much in terms of these late award upgrades that, like I say, the Army has had, you know, more than 50 of them over the last 15 years.
Well, it's an amazing story, and I encourage our audience to go out and find out more about it. Hopefully they'll make a big production of the awards on the 18th of March. And as Captain Kelly mentioned, that all of the living Medal of Honor recipients are going to be trying to gather in Washington on the 25th. So we encourage people to do that. I want to kind of do a quick transition here with you, Doug, and talk a little bit about the Stolen Valor issue that's going on and your new book entitled Restoring Valor. Can you tell me a little bit about that and why you and your wife put it together?
Well, the book we put together primarily because there's still a lot of misconception about stolen valor. A lot of people don't think that it's that serious or that prevalent an issue. And the fact of the matter is every city in America has its share of phonies, and these are predators that are preying on others. The other thing that we wanted to do through the book, my wife did an amazing thing in accomplishing that. I get a lot of the credit. You know, find a man that's accomplishing much, and look, you'll find a good woman behind him.
Oh, absolutely.
In getting that done. And so she wanted to share with others what she learned about the process of getting involved and getting things done, so perhaps it would be helpful to them.
Right. And so explain to our audience, because it's kind of gone away a little bit, at least in the public eye, of what Stolen Valor was and what happened to the Stolen Valor Act.
Well, for every living Medal of Honor recipient, there are currently only 75 of them, and shortly there hopefully will be 78 if we don't lose any more. There are dozens of Medal of Honor recipients out there that bought their medals or printed their citation on their computer, and they're phony. Many of them have never even served in the military, mm-hmm. or those who have claimed other awards, DSCs, Purple Hearts, and things like that. And so there are any number of phony heroes out there, and that tendency was given the term Stolen Valor by from the title of a book that was written in 1998. And most of us have then followed up on that, continuing to address this as Stolen Valor. Millions of dollars stolen every year from the VA system, sometimes by people who've never even sworn the oath and put on a uniform.
Right. It's disgusting when you think about it, and I don't want anybody, you know, we just had somebody that we're going to be using as an intern here, and he says, you need to see my DD-214. And I said, well, no, because I thought about it, and I said, well, yeah, maybe I do. Because we want to make sure that we're not caught up in this, you know, Stolen Valor thing. And I know that there are many people who have been out there professing that they were veterans, representing veterans and so forth, and maybe their heart was in the right place, but they didn't have the experience or the or the actual service to comply with that.
And even a DD-214 is not the cure-all. You know, a couple years ago, we had a guy walked into the Army recruiting offices down in Texas, gave him his DD-214, showing that he had served 4 years in the Marine Corps, two deployments to Iraq and one to Afghanistan. The Army enlisted him, made him a sergeant, didn't require him to take basic training, and the DD-214 itself was a forgery. Had we not found that guy and exposed him, he could have been a squad leader in Afghanistan, leading a squad with not even basic training.
Oh, and then that's one of the worst case scenarios, you know, versus the other people that you've exposed. And I know there have been a lot of them out there that, you know, had risen to high places in some veteran service organizations that got caught.
Oh yeah, you know, the VA, according to the Associated Press, is paying VA benefits to some 900 Vietnam War POWs. And only 660 POWs came back from Vietnam, and 100 of them are now deceased.
Oh, we got to work on that. There's a lot of things we got to work on. And, Doug, I'm counting on you and Dwight and our listeners out there to get involved in this. And we're going to come back actually with something that I thought was outrageous that I got the other night about a bill in Congress that was blocked for veterans' benefits. And we're going to come back and we're going to be talking to Representative of Senator Bernie Sanders, independent from, I want to say Vermont, but I'm not right on that. But we'll be back with that to talk about that issue that says the Senate blocks vets' benefits over diplomacy, killing Iran's sanctions. So you're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. Oh, before you cut me off here, if you want to get in on this conversation, 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio live from our flagship station, WDEO 990 AM in Ann Arbor, Michigan, WMAX 1440 AM in Saginaw, Michigan, WDEO 98.5 FM in Naples, Florida, or find us online at AveMariaRadio.net.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Nobody else I know has been there.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Not everyone understands that.
Things at home may be as you left them.
But you don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and right now we're going to have a little discussion amongst ourselves, so just get in closer to your radio. And joining us on the line right now is Steve Robertson. He's the Staff Director for the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. And Steve, I want to welcome you to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale.
Can you tell me what this bill was that Senator Sanders was attempting to get passed and what happened?
Yes, it was the S-1982, and it was the Comprehensive Veterans Health and Benefits and Military Retirement Pay Restoration Act of 2014. This bill was probably the most comprehensive veterans bill that has come out of Congress probably in 3 or 4 decades. It touched almost every aspect of the VA system, everything up to and not including the cemetery system. But basically, the bill consisted of provisions that were arrived from hearings that we had in Congress in the first session from veteran service organizations, military service organizations, veterans advocacy groups, and actually we had some provisions in there that members of Congress that are not members of the Veterans Affairs Committee had offered. And this package, there was over 100 provisions, but they did things such as expanding access to the system. It had provisions in there to expand the Caregivers Act, which passed a few years ago, which VA helps the caregivers of our severely wounded, disabled veterans. It had all kinds of provisions in there that had been endorsed by the American Legion, the VFW, the DAV, the Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America, the Wounded Warrior project. In fact, we had about 36 letters of support from diverse groups from across the country. And the thing that was really important about this bill is it was bipartisan. There were over 20 provisions in there that were offered by the Republicans that were included in the package. And in the bill, there were two omnibus bills that were actually put together, passed through the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, that had been voted on unanimously by the members of the committee to report to the Senate. Then we also had two provisions that had already passed the House by overwhelming majorities. And as you may recall, the House is controlled by the Republican Party. So this bill had a multitude of provisions that would benefit veterans and their families as well as service members. The interesting part is when we did the cloture vote to proceed, this is in order to bring the bill to the floor, the vote was 99-0 to proceed. So the debate started. But the amazing thing that happened is we had very few people in opposition. In fact, there were only a couple of people that got up and actually spoke against specific provisions. Most of the members that came in and spoke in opposition wanted to include Iran sanctions as part of the bill. The things that they objected, that were objected to, which were, in my opinion, were a little bit overstated, there was a claim that it would overwhelm the system by expanding access to the health care. In fact, they said it would, the bill would open it up to all 22 million veterans, which was not correct. What we did is we changed the criteria for priority group 8s. The access is determined on income levels.
Right.
And right now the threshold is based on each county. What Senator Sanders had proposed was that instead of having however many counties you have in Michigan, they would have one threshold for the entire state, and we'd pick the highest one so that way more veterans would be able to enter the system as a priority group 8. So that was completely a misinformation that was being distributed. Then the other concern was cost. The total cost of this bill was $21 billion over a 10-year period. And of that, $4 billion came from savings within the VA, savings that we were able to get through programs that VA has jurisdiction over. The remaining $17 billion was going to come through future spending, savings from future what they call overseas contingency operations funds. This is kind of a fund of money that has no cap on it, that's used for a variety of things in the past within DOD and overseas foreign relations type activities. So those were the two major objectives, but again, I need to reemphasize this, that they were bringing up these non-germane issues that they wanted to add to the bill that deal with Iran sanctions, Benghazi, Obamacare. It was just a whole bunch of different issues that had nothing to do with the VA. In fact, the debate, there was very little debate on the merits of the bill. And that was pretty frustrating for everybody that was watching the debate.
I would say, what can you give us that number of that bill again?
Yes, it was S-1982. We had 28 co-sponsors who, they were all Democrats, although we did try to work with Republicans to get them to support it. The final vote that came out was a procedural vote. We didn't really get to a vote, an up or down vote, on the bill itself. The procedural vote dealt with the waiving the budget. Because there was some opposition to how the committee had, or the Senator Sanders was offsetting the cost of these provisions using the OCO funds, there was some question, and they did a point of order on whether it was in compliance with the budget rules. So Senator Sanders asked to waive the budget rules. And that vote required 60 votes. We got 56. It failed 56 to 41. We needed 60 votes. We got 56.
Well, what do we need to do to get this thing done?
Well, the bill's been sent back to the committee, and now Senator Sanders is going to go back and work with some more people who had voted against the budget waiver. to see if we can convince them to support the package. And what we may be winding up doing is maybe adding some more provisions. One of the complaints was that we were not allowing any more amendments to the bill. Since we're going to have to bring it back, we may include a few more amendments that are germane to veterans' issues and hopefully secure some more votes that will help us get to the 60-vote mark.
Well, we certainly will do whatever we can to help you out. We're talking with Steve Robertson, who works with Senator Sanders. And I was right. It was independent from Vermont.
Right.
So I would encourage – go ahead.
And Dale, for the record, Senator Levin and Senator Sabino voted with Senator Sanders on this package.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for sharing this information with us, Stephen. I hope you will get back to us and let us know what happens to this bill, because obviously we think it's very important to serve our veterans the best way that we can. And, you know, here at Veterans Radio, we always say it's not the politics of the thing. It's just, you know, tell us what you're going to do and do it.
Well, and, you know, and Dale, that's a very important point. Senator Sanders actually, on numerous occasions during the debate, pleaded with the opposition to stick to the merits of the bill. And every time he would ask them to, you know, let's talk about the bill, the next senator to speak would bring up something that was totally off the mark. In fact, the American Legion National Commander wrote a letter and sent it to the Congress, basically telling the senators, let's debate the bill and not all these extemporaneous provisions.
Right. I totally agree. And, you know, as I was mentioning, one of our statements here that's on all of our literature is from George Washington, and it says, the willingness with which our young people are likely to serve in any war, no matter how justified, shall be directly proportional to how they perceive veterans of earlier wars are treated and appreciated by our nation. Senators, I don't care who you are, where you are, get on the bandwagon, take care of your veterans. Thank you very much, Steve, and we'll be talking with you shortly again, I hope.
Thank you, Dale.
All righty. Well, Dwight and Doug, what do you think? We got about a minute and a half. Solve the world's problems.
Well, we talked earlier about stolen valor, heroes who aren't really heroes and just pretending to be. I think the biggest problem we face today is we've got people pretending to be public servants in Washington, D.C.
Thank you for that one, Doug.
And I will simply add this quote that I'm seeing from Senator Bernie Sanders. He asked, how is it that we can afford to give $1 trillion in tax breaks to the top 2%, but we can't afford to provide for our veterans?
Well,
amen.
You know, I understand, you know, what some people's priorities are and so forth, but the thing is, just tell us the truth. Do what is right for the greater good. There's 330 million people living in America, and sometimes we all need a little assistance, and just let us know what you're up to, and, you know, we'll follow along. But don't do all these little things behind the things. And I'm hoping that somebody will get in touch with us and let us know what they think about what's going on in Congress. But until next week, we'll have to do that. Doug Stirner, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. Go to his website, Hall of Valor. You're going to find amazing stuff in there. And look for his book, Restoring Valor. Dwight Zimmerman, author of Uncommon Valor. Dwight, I'll be talking with you later. We need to get you back here and start talking about some books that people are interested in. So thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All right. Join us next week on Veterans Radio. Bob Gould will be your host, and we're going to be talking about jobs. Until next week, this is Dale Thronberry. You are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.